Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat, part of the Triple Play Fantasy Network. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Chris Torres. I'll be your host today. I'll be flying solo for our first segment, where I will be interviewing Jason Beck, who writes about the Detroit Tigers for MLB.com. I'll then be joined by my co-host Mike Carter for our fantasy follow-up segment. Let's get right to it and bring in Jason. This is Jason's second time on the show. We really enjoyed having him on last time and wanted to get him back on. Thank you so much for joining me, Jason. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I know you are scouting some pitching prospects over there at double-A team for the Tigers. So if you could tell us who were you scouting or who are you looking at today, and what's your impressions?
Just looking at Troy Melton's making his first double-A start today. And, you know, kind of he's got good stuff. I think he's still trying to learn how to command a little bit more. Might be a little bit of jitters first time at this stop. So we'll see how it goes further on. But it took him a while to get locked in. It's not the warmest day here in Erie, PA. But he seemed to warm up as the outing went on.
Okay, awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us here. Let me start by asking you, we'll move to the big league club here and talk about Jason Foley. In our game, in fantasy baseball, saves are so important. And because of that, Jason Foley was one of the most sought-after pickups so far this season, with some teams spending upwards of 30% of their season-long budget on him. Based on your assessment of the bullpen situation in Detroit, do you think this was a wise or not-so-wise investment? And can you tell us why or why not?
I think long-term it could work out. I think you might have some rough spots early on because it definitely sounds like AJ Hinch is looking at a little bit of closer by committee here or closer by matchup. He hasn't committed to fully full-time. He says he wants to settle in on a core late-inning group eventually this season, giving guys time to settle into roles. And I think Foley's got the best chance to end up with a closer job coming out of that, but I think it might take some time to get there. So you might have to be a little patient and endure some seventh and eighth inning appearances before he gets settled into the ninth. The stuff's there, and I think he's made an impression with the stuff. I think it's just a matter of, you know, giving some time for him to stand out from some of the other guys, including Alex Lang, who was the closer for most of the last couple seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I got that one wrong. I was on Shelby Miller. I really thought they brought him in and he was kind of who they were looking at as the guy. I didn't believe in Alex Lang necessarily as the closer, but wasn't quite on Jason Foley. So that is one early season regret of mine.
Well, at least with Shelby Miller, you got some wins, though.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I haven't started him for those because, you know, like I can't really depend on the wins and he's not... You know, not a lock for save, so it's hard to put him in my lineup. So, but he's looked good as well. So you never know what his role could evolve into. But I wanted to ask you about Parker Meadows and Spencer Torkelson. Any concern around their slow starts? I recognize we're not even 2 weeks in, but do you have any insight into their struggles so far, or is this just a regular slump that we wouldn't even notice if it came in the middle of the season?
I think Torkelson, you know, his early seasons the last couple years haven't been great. I think he's kind of slow to warm. I think he warms up with the weather a little bit. He's more of a good finisher. So it seems like a matter of timing with him. He's seeing the ball well. But I think if you've watched, he's had a lot of pop-ups. He's gotten the ball in the air, just hasn't done enough, just been a little bit off on those. So I suspect that's going to improve with a little bit of time here. With Meadows, it's been in and out. He's chased some pitches that he was laying off of during his stretch run last year. I think he's shown the ability to be pretty disciplined there. He might be feeling a little bit of pressure to try to do a little bit more. I think as we get along, his value might be more when he focuses on getting on base and utilizing his speed. Not to say he doesn't have power, because clearly he does. But I think, you know, for the Tigers' purposes, they would like to see him, you know, doing some on-base percentage and giving them a chance to use that speed to try to manufacture some offense. So I think short to medium term, there might be more of a potential for, you know, for some steals value there as he gets a little bit more disciplined at the plate and starts focusing on getting on base.
Do you think there's any scenario where he starts losing PT if, say, his struggles continue here, or do you think he's pretty cemented in center field?
I think he's got the strong side of a platoon at the least. They like him against right-handed hitters. I think, interestingly enough, the defense that Matt Buehrling has shown in center field could make him more of an option in center against lefties if Meadows continues to struggle. In spring training, Meadows more than held his own against lefties, but if he, you know, the longer he slumps, the more they'll try to set up more favorable situations for him as a way to get him going.
Gotcha. And I assume Torkelson will be in there regardless. You go 0 for his next 100, and I think he'll probably still be in the lineup. And yeah, it seems like Torkelson is just a little off right now. If you actually look at his strikeout percentage, it's gone down. He's around 25% last year, and so far it's at 16. So it seems like the discipline is plate discipline has been fine. It's just a matter of now he's got to square the ball up a little better. So yeah, definitely some reason for optimism for him. Want to ask you about Jackson Jobe, a guy who, you know, fantasy managers, I think, are, you know, he's going to be on everybody's radar, obviously, as he gets closer to a promotion. When do you think we see him in the majors?
I think it's possible to see him near the end of the season, depending on how he goes. I think he has some growth to do, though. His first double-A start was a little bit of a rocky road. The stuff was there. The command was a little bit in and out. In fact, I actually talked with him this morning a little bit about it because, you know, he's over here in Erie, too, you know, on the same team. They are easing him along right now, trying to watch his innings. So, you know, that alone kind of gives you an idea that they want to save some innings there for a potential cameo appearance in the majors near the end of the year. I think it's just a matter of, you know, he's got to get a little bit better staying within the zone, a little bit more like last year, and also learning how to sequence a little better before they move him along here. But once he gets settled in here, it shouldn't take long for him to get a shot in AAA and face some more advanced hitters.
Mm-hmm. If I set the over-under at 40 major league innings, what would you take?
I'd probably go with the under on that. I'd be surprised if we see him before September, to be totally honest. Not ruling it out. You know, if they end up in a situation where they're in contention and they need starters, I think it's certainly possible. But, you know, 40 innings, you know, if they're looking at about 5 innings to start, you know, you're talking about 8 starts there. You know, that would be looking at like an early August type promotion. Not impossible, but I think that's a little bit on the aggressive side with what they might be looking to do. And I think it also might be a little tougher if they continue to have the starting pitching depth that they seem to have right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're breaking my heart here. I've got some teams. We do these crazy leagues where they're like 50-round drafts, like 750 players deep. And I got a little Jackson Jobe on some of these teams just because I figured, hey, he's going to give this team a boost at the end of the season. But so I'm hoping that we get closer to that early August timeline as opposed to, you know, September. But we shall see. Any other minor leaguers, Jason, that you think fantasy gamers should be keeping an eye on this season? Either someone who may contribute to the big club, the big league club, or someone who is just going to be moving up prospect lists and you think is going to be kind of on dynasty players' radars?
I think Jace Young is somebody who could end up in the majors before the end of the season. He made a very good impression in spring training. And, you know, to be honest, the third base situation is fairly wide open in Detroit. They have some guys handling it right now. Gio Urshela's looked good early on, but I think the more, Young gets settled in and holds his own in Toledo, the more he's going to make a push to get a look in the majors. He's got an advanced maturity and approach for his age. He has a potential impact bat if he can, keep the swings and misses down. And, he has better than advertised defense. I think he can handle multiple defensive positions in the infield. It's just a matter of getting that shot. And, I think the Detroit's going to want to take a look at him before the season ends. He might have a better chance at getting up before Job does, to be honest. Beyond that, I still think Wilmer Flores has a chance to put it together and be in the pitching mix in Detroit. It might end up being as a reliever, maybe like a multi-inning guy, maybe even getting a shot in like the later innings. But there's a good power arm there when he's right. They pushed him up to AAA for a reason. I think he's the guy to look at. Mm-hmm. And I think Ty Madden, who's also here in Erie, he's part of the starting pitching depth that these guys have. And I think they'd like to see him at some point before the year's up. Again, maybe even before Job, depending on how he goes. They've challenged him to be able to fare better against left-handers. That involves throwing a splitter more, which is a relatively new pitch for him. But he has an advanced approach. He made an impression in spring training. And I think he's going to be pushing for to move up to Toledo early in the year. And once you get up there, then you're part of the pitching depth for Detroit, because as injuries come along, they're going to be looking for help.
The future is bright in Detroit. There's a lot of guys it seems like they have on the way. So definitely reason for optimism with the Tigers. I'm going to get you out of here on this, Jason. Give us a bold prediction for a Tigers player the rest of the season.
Bold prediction for a Tigers player. Let me consider this one. Honestly, I think Tarek Skubal has the potential for 200 strikeouts. Okay. I don't know if that's bold or more like lukewarm, but, I've been on the bandwagon for him as like a dark horse Cy Young candidate. And I think there's a lot of potential for swing and miss there.
Yeah, I mean, he was a fantasy darling going in like the third round of drafts. So that's what the people who drafted him are certainly hoping for, those 200 strikeouts. Do you think we see more than, I mean, if you had to set his innings projection, do you think he's more like 175, or do you think there's potential for more than that?
I can see him in 180, 185 innings range. I don't know if he's going to get all the way to 200. He is coming off a reduced workload last year because he came back from surgery in midseason. But it wasn't major surgery, so they might be a little bit more aggressive. Not major surgery in terms of like not Tommy John, it was a flexor tendon. Right. So they might be able to be a little bit more aggressive with him. Plus, he keeps himself in good enough shape to where, you can see him staying fairly durable. I think the key for him is going to be staying healthy enough to keep making his turn in the rotation. I think he should be able to do that. And then you look at about 5 or 6 innings to start. I think there's a pathway to get to 180 innings, maybe even a little bit above that, somewhere between 180 and 200.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, we will leave it there. Thank you so much again for joining us, Jason. If you could just tell our listeners where they could find your work and where they could find you on social media.
Yeah, I'm at MLB.com and Tigers.com on the internet. And my Twitter handle is @BeckJason. And I am also on Threads and Blue Sky.
All right, great. Thank you again. We are going to take a short break, and I will be back with my co-host, Mike Carter. Welcome back here with Mike Carter. You know him. You love him. Mike Carter of Fantrax, Roto Baller.
Oh, boy.
He's doing everything these days. Coach over at Batavia, right? That's the name of the school?
Yep.
So he's got it all going on. Mike, good to see you, man. It's been a couple weeks. How are you doing, and how's the first few weeks of the fantasy season treating you?
Well, I would say this. You know, I had somebody tell me this a long time ago. It's better to be seen and not viewed, which is good. You know, keeping a head above water, staying above ground. Those are key things, right? So I've been good. It's been busy. You know, it's the middle of spring testing season here in Illinois. That's crazy town. Fantasy is going pretty good considering the level of injuries that we've witnessed. I'm in the running in just about every league that I'm in so far, which is good for me because usually by this point I have three or four teams that are complete duds already. So it isn't going too badly given the injury landscape. I've been surprised. I haven't been hit that hard, and I like to think that maybe that's because I devalued pitching a little bit this year, but I guess we'll see. Now, that from the guy who took Garrett Cole and Glarf round one. But we'll see. How are you doing? How's things for you? How's your team's looking so far?
Kind of a mixed bag. Which, I mean, kind of to be expected. I'm in.
Sure.
I'm going to sound like such a degenerate, but what am I at? Nine or ten leagues, counting like DCs. I did the Champions League, so a main event. Online championship. It's all on FBC that I'm doing this year. And I know that's still not much compared to some people, but, you know, the average person who's just a casual player be like, holy cow, man, get a life. 10 leagues. kind of a mixed bag. I mean, DCs are actually looking pretty good. I think I've got some live teams there that have avoided injuries to this point and look really strong. So excited about those. Main event, not looking so hot. I feel like I haven't had a hit in my main event league over the past week. So kind of fading there. Started out good, but I've been fading over the past week. But hey, it's 2 weeks in. Can't take too much away from it. As long as you haven't lost, you know, Bieber and, you know, we'll see with Strider. But like, those are kind of the big ones. Like, if your team is relatively healthy right now, even if you don't look great in the standings, I think you got to be pretty, pretty pleased. But the Grim Reaper is probably coming for you too. The way these injuries are hitting. So
no doubt. Yeah.
But anyway, let's get into. I know we did this during the season last year. We kind of had a structure to this segment. And we started off always by looking at the week that was, looking at any fantasy relevant takeaways from the prior week. So, I mean, really the big one we just touched on is the injuries, right? It's what everybody's talking about. Everybody's trying to figure out why this is happening, what the solution is. I don't know. I mean, I've heard so many. I don't think we should go deep into that. But anything else, Mike? Anything else over the past week that that stands out to you?
No, I mean, I think there are some teams that are worse than we thought they were going to be so far. And I think that that's providing you some actionable ideas in terms of how you want to approach that. You know, last week in my Rotoballer piece, looking at pitchers to stream that are owned in, you know, less than 50% and less than 30% of Yahoo leagues, it became really apparent to me that it's a really good idea to start streaming against the White Sox and to start streaming against the Oakland Athletics and to stream against Colorado and maybe even Miami at this point. They've been so bad.
Oh, yeah.
And so I started thinking about it from that standpoint. And I think my biggest kind of takeaway, it's really not rocket science, right, is we really probably are going to start seeing more people streaming pitchers in light of these injuries. Now, Travis Sawchek put out today that, you know, we're not really seeing more Tommy John surgeries than what we normally do during this time of year. And there's a lot of attention being paid right now to, yes, maybe the velocity cannot continue the way that it's been and spin and the different things that are going on. All this debate, you know, when you have a guy like Spencer Strider and Garrett Cole, who are arguably the two best pitchers in our game for fantasy, go down with arm injuries, it gives everybody a little bit of pause. But I'm wondering if maybe the big takeaway is that what we should have been doing all along is devaluing these guys in streaming to begin with anyway.
It's tough to say. I mean, I don't know, man. You've kind of been on that train for a while, right? Like the idea of pushing pitchers down and not really taking some of these aces up top, aside from your Glarf league, right?
Right, right, right.
And that didn't work out too well. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, in 1DC, I actually, one that I share with our friend Nathan Grimm, we had actually said, we're not taking a pitcher before round 10. So we went all hitting and closers. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. No, we're not taking a starter before round 10. We went all hitting and closers. And, you know, you would think, I mean, and we took guys like we got Bailey Ober, which didn't work out the first start. So that's probably why we haven't started out so well. It's going to take a while to rebound from that. But we got like Ober and Managa, Nick Pivetta, who now has also, you know, has his own injury. So, and that team, to be honest, is, I think, probably like 12th or 13th in the league. So I don't know. It's hard to say whether. I think you're going to see a reaction. Don't get me wrong. Next year, if these injuries continue, you probably won't see a pitcher in the first round, maybe not even the second round. We are a very reactionary bunch. So
that we are.
Yeah, that might be the move. I think that that could be the way that the industry heads. But yeah, it's just been really frustrating, man. It's almost like these past few days have kind of been like, even though they haven't hit me too much personally, it's like, this is not fun anymore. You know, it starts to become like football, you know, like where it's just like these guys get injured all the time. And if you lose one of these top guys, it's like, well, your season's pretty much shot. It's been super frustrating. Is there anybody that you are looking at? I mean, I know you're doing the piece over at Rotoballer for pitchers that are less than 50% owned. Like, do you have any saviors for us? Do you have anybody who you really think is... listen, we're not going to find Strider. We're not going to find Shane Bieber. Mm-hmm. But are there any pitchers that you're looking at that you think can at least keep our teams afloat and provide some value for us here?
It's a great question. And I think that it depends on, to me, I think it depends a little bit on how much risk you're willing to tolerate. You know, like I think I'm willing at this point, just based on what we've been seeing, I think I'm tolerating a little bit more risk than what I have maybe potentially in the past. But I wrote about a few guys that I think if you lower your sights a little bit in terms of, you know, you're not going to find a guy that's going to get 10, 12 strikeouts on the waiver wire usually, right, at this point. And then for every guy that you have, like Logan Allen that you recommend, who then gets destroyed by my beloved White Sox. Other day, you know, You have other guys that I think are pretty valuable that are sort of flying under the radar. One of those guys that I wrote about last weekend was Zach Littell for the Tampa Bay Rays, and I think a lot of people look at him and think, oh, you know, he's just filler. He's a guy that's at the back end of your rotation. Yeah, that could be. But at this point, we're taking anybody that's still vertical and standing, right? I mean, so I think that there's something to be said for guys like that. I think Bradford in Texas is another guy, too, right now to look at where I got him cheap in, I forget if it was my TGFBI or if it was Glarf last weekend for like $10, $12. Now, is he a world beater? No. But he's getting the ball on a good team. He's got a decent chance to win every night. He's on a really good offensive team. And he's actually pitched fairly well. And so if you lower your sight lines a little bit, I think, and start looking for that middle of the rotation type of guy that can help you, obviously you're not going to find replacements for the guys like Cole and Strider and Bieber on the waiver wire, I don't think, you know. But if you're smart and selective and start looking a little bit further out, you know, look at next 2 weeks, of matchups that guys have, you might be able to piece it together enough to hold it together until those guys either come back or just to keep you afloat in whatever league that you're in. Those are a couple of guys that come to mind. I mean, I haven't started working on my piece yet for this weekend. I guess I better start. It is Wednesday, and start looking at that. Some of those guys that that might be available there. But those are two that kind of jump out at me that I was looking at last weekend. I another guy that I like that I feel is always underrated, nobody ever really seems to like, is like Seth Lugo. You know, like he gets guys out. He doesn't kill your ratios. He's going to average a couple of decent strikeouts. And a guy that I've been really high on this year so far, too, is Brady Singer. I mean, his pitch mix looks different to me. It looks better than what it's been. Yeah. I retain high hopes for him, you know. So I think you have to be able to tolerate a little bit of risk and understand that even if you're streaming these guys, you're still running the risk of an explosion. But you're running that risk with anybody anyway. You know, even ace guys are going to have bad outings, as we've seen already, right? Guys like Max Fried are getting destroyed, right? So yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's just so hard, too, like looking at some of these early numbers, these small samples. You're like, not sure what to take is real. And like, I'm looking at Brady Singer right now, man. I'm actually, to be honest, I'm like really pissing myself. I didn't really consider him that after that first start. I'm like, oh, it's Brady Singer. You know, I fell into that mindset, which I feel is really a losing mindset, where you just like people were looking at Nick Pivetta this year. Oh, he's Nick Pivetta. You know, how could he? I know someone actually who kind of fell into that mindset with Nick Pivetta. you doubted my Nick Pivetta love. But I think sometimes we get caught up in these, like, you know, we got to remove the name. Right. We get caught up in like the emotion with it. Like, oh, Nick Pivetta's burned us in the past. So it's like, oh, we can't take a chance on him. Brady Singer, he's burned me in the past. I'm not going to go there again. Well, maybe there's something different. And just looking at his underlying stats right now, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, he's not going to continue what he's doing right now. But for a 15 teamer, I think he's going to give you some really good value. And you mentioned the idea of playing the matchups. That is so, so important. I am amazed at how many times, you know, Matthew Davis, how he does those bad starts. I forget what
Matty Wood, it, baby. Matty Wood.
Yeah. He'll put on Twitter, like, whenever a pitcher gets blown up. I enjoy it. I don't know. Except when it's my pitcher.
Right.
But I'm amazed almost every time at some of these blow up outings, how many people are, like, he'll show the roster shit or the percentage of people who started him in the main event. And every time I'm blown away by like how many people are starting pitchers in bad matchups. First of all, just start with, if a pitcher is on the road, you got to be cautious right there. I remember in Baseball Forecast for a few years ago, there was an article about this, that basically if you just remove all the other things, if you just start pitchers at home, like, the difference between home and away is drastic.
Very often. So
just start there. If you have a pitcher going on the road, you already have to pause and say, okay, I got to look at the opposing team. Is this actually a good offense? And is this the type of pitcher that I can trust on the road? In today's landscape, there's not many, you know, like, especially like if you're in like a 12 teamer, like, I don't want to be starting marginal guys against, you know, top 15 offenses on the road, because I feel like that's where you see the blowups. Right. So I think that's so important to consider. You got to look at the matchup. You should be looking ahead. Like you said, you should be looking 2-3 weeks ahead, because, you know, for the most part, aside from a rain out here or there, you can have a pretty good idea of who these pitchers are lined up to face. So anyway, Brady Singer, I think he's going to have value in the right matchups. Pretty much everything under the hood. He's got lucky with his BABIP, but still with a 15.8 swinging strike percentage, that'll play.
Sure will. So,
yeah, what I did here, I just, you know, forget all the fancy metrics and everything. I just did a leaderboard for swinging strike percentage among qualified pitchers. I'm just going to throw out some names, you know, that might be of interest here. So you got Brady Singer's number 14. Tyler Anderson. Found this guy interesting, man. Uh-huh. Someone I didn't even consider at like pick 600 in draft champions leagues. He's gotten off to a really good start. The strikeout percentage doesn't look, it's 15.7%, so it's below average, but his swinging strike is 15.5%, which is well above average. CSW, 31.6%, well above average. Z contact, in zone contact, 78.8%, well above average. So I don't know. I feel like he's someone like, I think he's borderline 12 teamer, 12 team worthy at this point, given those underlying metrics. Let's see here. Bowden Francis is another guy. Like, his surface stats don't look good, right? Oh, they don't look good at all. Holy
no, they do not.
12.96 ERA and a 1.92 whip, but a 3.45 Sierra. He is striking out almost 30% of batters. Again, very small sample. We're talking two starts here, but 14.1% swinging strike rate. So, and I think he's got a good matchup, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it's the Rockies coming up. So he's someone that I am definitely interested in for 15 teamers. Let's see. Anybody else that sticks out here? Moving on to the set. Ben Brown. Okay. He pitched well against San Diego. I don't know if he stays up, but he's someone to look at with a 13% swinging strike rate to this point. Jose Buto. Going to get some leash in that Mets rotation. Some strong underlying numbers. So those are just a couple names. Jay Silseth, man, I was so excited for him. Sucks that he got injured too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough one.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. I don't know. We weren't planning to do that segment, but we went off on a little bit of a tangent. Hopefully you got some good information there. Hey, one last name, Spencer Turnbull. He's someone I picked up in my main event, and that's turned out well. What are your thoughts on him?
I love him. I think another one of those guys that kind of fell off the radar and people weren't paying attention to. He was an effective guy before he was hurt, and the Tigers let him walk. He's in a good situation. I don't see any reason why he could not be helpful to a team in the right context.
Yeah, and he's got your team, the White Sox, next week. So we know that's a
start him no matter what.
Yeah. All right, Mike. So we're going to look ahead, which we kind of did with pitchers already. Anybody on the hitting side that you're looking at moving forward that you think is worth picking up off waivers or targeting in a trade? Who's someone that's catching your eye right now?
You know, I this might sound a little crazy, and it's a fairly deep flyer, but a guy that I've been really high on going back to last year is Bryce Turang. I think he's had a real nice start to the season for Milwaukee. He's getting playing time. The thing that I always thought was interesting about him, and this isn't like necessarily a fantasy thing, but having seen him play a lot when he was younger, he's got great hands. And not only defensively, but his hands are quick at the bat. And I really thought seeing him, I thought if given an opportunity to just be left alone, that he's somebody that could hit. And given that the middle infield landscape so far is not off to a real hot start in a lot of places, you know, I've got Tyro Estrada in a couple places where I'm relying on him to be my starter, and he's not been real good so far. You know, you could do worse than getting a guy that has dual eligibility up the middle and is going to probably steal 25 bases pretty easily. And I think his batting average is going to be higher. You and I talked about that earlier in the offseason, that I thought that, you know, a lot of the prognostications were calling him a 230 hitter. I think he's better than that, and I think he's going to play. I don't really see there being a lot of standing in his way in Milwaukee right now to getting adequate playing time. And especially if he starts to hit lefties and continues to hit them, I think he's going to play a lot. So that's a guy that I've picked up in a couple of places cheaply. Obviously, deeper leagues, 12 and 15s are places where I would have him. Anything less than that, I don't think I would. But I like Turang a lot. I always have.
Yeah, someone I didn't even consider once this draft season. I just figured he would fall into some sort of platoon, and I didn't see a lot of pop. I knew the speed was there, but just didn't believe in you know, the whole package there. And definitely am looking wrong on that one. He's got 7 stolen bases already. Been fortunate with his BABIP, 429 so far, but you know, he's got speed to run a higher BABIP. Not going to be 429, but I think, like you said, the average is not going to hurt you. Hard hit percentage 25%, soft hit percentage 10%, so making decent quality of contact, and only a 3.8% swinging strike rate. So, yeah. I think he's going to come back to earth a little bit, but I mean, he's going to steal. If he's already at 7 stolen bases, we're looking at somebody that's probably going to steal 30 to 40 bases. So that is super valuable, especially in a deeper league, if you have him as your middle infielder. All right. So he did something similar here with hitters, and all I did was just do a leaderboard with hard hit percentage. So I'm just going to identify a few players that maybe we should be looking at moving forward that might have been undervalued on draft day. So someone that jumps out that it looks like is really having a bounce back year. Hopefully he can finally stay healthy, and that's Mitch Haniger. Remember, this was someone a few years ago that was like, I think he had 30 something home runs, 100 something RBIs. Like, he was a certified masher. And to this point, he's looking really solid, a 48% hard hit rate. Even the contact has been much better, only 7.1 swinging strike rate, hitting the ball in the air. I really like what Mitch Haniger is doing, playing every day for the Mariners. The question with him is, can he stay healthy? So
always
that is obviously to be determined. Let's see. I think the NJ Melendez post-hype breakout is in full swing here. If he's available, and definitely not in a 15-teamer, probably not in a 12-teamer, but if he's out there in, say, a 10-teamer, go pick him up. 52% hard hit rate. I mean, everything under the hood looks great. He's making better. He's making better contact, better quality of contact, hitting the ball in the air for power. Can even chip in a few steals. He's someone I think we've got to remember. He was a top prospect. I think he lost a lot of luster because he lost that catcher eligibility, but I think he went a little too far going around pick 300 this season. I think he's going to be a smash for whoever took him at that point.
Yeah, and he gets to play the White Sox a lot, as he did last week, and he had 3 homers against the Sox last weekend.
There you go. That'll make anybody look good. So let's see. Tyler O'Neill, another guy who is who's bouncing back strong. Everything under the hood looks good for him. Mm-hmm. Another guy, though, can he stay healthy? I'm going to give you a really deep cut here. This is someone who I picked up the other day uncontested in my 15-team main event league. And I was surprised, actually, because, again, we're only looking at a couple weeks of data here. But this is someone who has shown some promise before and just hasn't quite put it together. He's been up and down. And that's Luis Garcia Jr. for the Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
I've been really impressed with what he has done to this point. I mean, he's always been a guy who makes good contact. He's always, you know, he's even projected for like a 270 average. But what he's adding this year is really strong quality of contact. He has a 24% barrel rate to this point in the season, a 110.6 max EV, a 40.9% hard hit rate.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem with him is that he hits the ball on the ground too much. He's always been above 50%. But even if he's running a 50% ground ball rate, if he's making the amount of contact with the quality of contact that he's making currently, he also can steal some bases. So he's someone I really think I want to see him move up in that Nationals order, but I feel he can be like a 15-15 type player with a 260 to 270 batting average.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on Luis Garcia?
I think it's a great call. You know, there's another guy that's flown under the radar for a long time and had some opportunities and really didn't look too good in those opportunities that he got, although he did show some flashes. But right now, I think he's kind of coming into his own. And a lot of people don't know him yet, but I think that's another guy, along with like what I was talking about with Terang, that is kind of taking the league by surprise here a little bit, and somebody that can provide you a lot of value on your team.
Yeah, and it feels like he's been around forever, but remember, he came up at like 20 years old.
Right.
I think he's like 24 now. So I think it's totally reasonable for him to take a little time to develop and him finally hitting his stride in his age 24 season.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Yeah, I think those are a couple names to keep an eye on here. Curtis Mead, another guy. He's getting a little bit more playing time. Everything under the hood for him is looking pretty good. Hasn't really shown in the results yet, but keep an eye on him. If he keeps getting more playing time, remember, this guy was a top hitting prospect. His problem has been his defense, but never has been a question about his hit tool, his power. So if he's going to start getting regular playing time, I think he's going to provide some value. So, all right, we will leave that there. We're going to transition to bullpens, your area of expertise. So tell me, Mike, are there any bullpens that we should be watching, any guys that we should be targeting in Fab this coming week that could get us some saves?
Well, you know, I think there's been a lot of discussion. Obviously, we've seen more blown up bullpens this year so far than I think what we were anticipating. You know, last year was a time of relative stability in the world of bullpens, and I think we're kind of back into that crazy right now. One that I'm kind of paying attention to, obviously Texas is one that, you know, Jose Leclerc was given the job at the beginning of the season. We kind of knew that that would be shaky. He's been very shaky thus far. David Robertson hasn't really been much better. So if you're looking at, you know, putting in a fab bid for a closer type, you know, Robertson is probably the heir apparent there. Leclerc, last I checked, had an ERA over 14. Not so good. And you know, Robertson is a guy that I think could get in there, although he did blow a save last night. And lo and behold, if we look a little bit further under the hood there, our old friend Kirby Yates has got a win and a hold this week. So who knows what's going to happen there? You know, maybe a dollar dart throw at Kirby Yates might be not a bad idea, even though he's 35 years old and it appears his best days are behind him. I do want to tell our listeners to be wary of what's going on in Philadelphia. You know, we talked in the offseason, you and I, many times about that bullpen situation there and about the number of weapons that they have in Philadelphia. And Jose Alvarado got the first two saves there, but then on Monday night, he was brought into a situation in the eighth inning to face the 9-1-2 in the order, and he got a hold and left the save for Gregory Soto. Sir Anthony Dominguez also had a hold there, and Jeff Hoffman was in that game as well, although he did get he ended up getting the win, but he got a blown save as well. But this is that thing we're talking about there in Philadelphia, where Alvarado's stuff is disgusting, and everyone who watches games knows that. However, the thing we have to be aware of is that Rob Thompson is not afraid to use any of these guys at any one point in the game. And that also includes Matt Strom, who we haven't really talked very much about either. So I'm standing by my early assessment that Alvarado might end up getting 60% of those saves there, but that other people are going to also be in the mix there for saves. If you were to look at it a little bit further, I think Hoffman is the guy there that I would be trying to get some shares of if you're desperate for saves. And God knows, aren't we all always desperate for saves? Obviously, the Milwaukee situation is one that bears watching as well. Although the only save that was got there this week so far was by Thiago Vieira, the former White Sox farmhand, who's also got an explosively big arm. But I still think there it's a question of Abner Uribe probably getting the most of the opportunities. They really seem to prefer Piamps in an eighth inning role. Plus, Piamps has not been very good. Trevor Megill went down last week with a concussion. Did you hear about that? It was a really weird situation.
He had
food poisoning, and he blacked out at a restaurant or a supermarket somewhere and hit his head. And so right now it appears that Uribe is the guy to own there. And I guess the last one that I'm concerned about is, you know, David Bednar has not looked himself in Pittsburgh at all. He started late and he came in last week and got a save. He's had two blown saves and a loss since then. And lo and behold, old friend, part-time delinquent in the offseason, Aroldis Chapman, has four holds in a row in his last four games that he's been pitching. So if Bednar doesn't figure it out there pretty quickly, you could see him in a lower leverage situation and see Chapman in that role there in Pittsburgh for a time, which would be interesting. So bullpens are crazy, as we all know, and they're getting crazier. Michael Kopech was crazy good last night for the White Sox. I don't know if anybody saw that. He had four strikeouts out of six guys and was over 100, I think, double-digit times yesterday. The problem with Kopech, I stand by it, is that that's all he can do. All he can do is throw fastballs. He can't locate his slider. If he can't do that, he's not going to be closing for long. Brebbia went down with that calf strain again here last week. And so it appears to be a fairly wide open situation there. Steven Wilson could get some saves in Chicago, but let's be honest, there's not a lot of saves to be had here. They're 2-10. So. No.
All right, my friend, thank you for that summary there. There's a lot going on. You're going to be a busy man this season.
Yeah, I'm going to be always a
bit. I feel like last year you had a little bit of almost a
respite, right?
Like,
yeah,
I mean, like it was just like
it wasn't everybody so bad, kept their right? job. Yeah, it wasn't so bad, and now all of a sudden we've got carnage. So
that's the right way to describe this season so far. Just right. carnage.
Right, exactly. Across,
every aspect of fantasy. So, all right. So that's your bullpen update. And before we get out of here, as we usually do, we're going to have our mental health minute. So, Mike, tell us what you've been doing to maintain your wellness over the past couple weeks here.
Well, I'm going to point this out as an older fat guy, you know, hanging out. I've been really, really busy. You know, we had the spring break. We were down in Florida for a week, and I got a lot of walking in down there, which was great. That felt really good. But the one thing that I would really suggest to people to start thinking about doing, if you're not, especially if you're a middle-aged person and you don't have a lot of time, is doing some yoga. And I'm not real good at it. I'd like to think that I'm getting better at it. It's something that I need to continue to work on. It's a work in progress for me. But there have been 3 days this week, you know, where I haven't been home before 9 o'clock and leaving at 6 a.m. to start my day between my job and coaching the baseball team and then my parental responsibilities and whatnot. And that can leave you feeling really worn down, especially in springtime when doesn't it always feel like in the springtime that there's more demands on us as people across the board? And so I started doing that again and really focusing on, for me, the breathing aspect of it. And I can't meditate worth a shit. I can never get it down to just one thought. I've always got a number of different things that are going on in my head. But I can really work on the breathing and my grounding techniques. And I start off every morning with sitting with my on a chair, a hard chair in our living room, with my feet on the floor and really pushing down through the floor to try to stay grounded. And to work on my breathing as well, because I think mindset is so important, especially when you know you're going to be busy. You can't do necessarily a lot of things about being busy, but you can choose how you handle it and how you prepare yourself for your busy on that day. And so I've really been trying to incorporate that more into my system. And kudos to my brother. My brother's really big into yoga. He's a workout warrior. He's in great shape, unlike me. And he really was the guy who inspired me to start doing that again. And so, it's something that I think is really helpful for a lot of people, especially if you don't have a lot of time to exercise. Doing 10 or 15 minutes of yoga in the morning will get you limber, and it will get you in the right mindset and the right mind frame to start your day.
Yeah, that's so important, man. I mean, obviously, like aside from the yoga, I mean, just starting your day off on the right foot. I feel like that for me personally, if I get off to a good start, wake up early, like do something, whether it's breathing or just, you know, having time to relax or even working out. I feel like the rest of my day goes so much better. So I think that's some helpful advice there. So for me over the past week, and it's been a rough week to be honest with you. And I felt like yesterday I needed like a cleanse almost, like to just like, I hate clutter. I hate stuff, you know, and I feel like I have too much of that, you know. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to go and go through like my attic and I don't know, just like getting rid of things and cleaning out my personal space just makes me feel good. So that's what I ended up doing yesterday. And I did a little bit this morning too. You know, I went into my attic and I have like a box of like some memorabilia stuff, some like mementos and things like that. And I had a box of freaking newspapers from like when
Derek
Jeter got his 3000th hit and, you know, like different like things like that. And I'll be honest with you. Like I looked at that stuff and I'm like, what am I keeping this for? You know, like it's cool to like look back on, I guess, but it's just going to sit in my attic for the next, whatever, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I kick the bucket, my kids are going to go up there and look at all the stuff I have. And they'll be like, well, what do I do with this now? You know? Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. like, what is that stuff doing for me?
Right.
And I think a lot of people just accumulate stuff, not to get too deep, but it almost like fill a void, you know, yes. and they just like collect.
Absolutely.
You know, and I see that like my mom, and like she has an attic full of just all this, like these antiques and everything. It's like, what are you doing with that? It's just, to me, it's adding stress to your life, you know? And so it was just very therapeutic for me to go in, and I have like even old baseball cards, you know, like uh-huh. what is my Jermaine Dye rookie card is maybe worth 50 cents right now. And maybe in 10 years, it'll be worth 75 cents, which will actually be negative when you account for inflation. So it's like, what am I keeping that for? Okay. Just get rid of it. So that's my advice to everybody out there. Just find a few things that you ask yourself, like, is this necessary? Do I really need this? And if not, just donate it, throw it in the trash, mm-hmm, whatever mm-hmm. you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty confident that it'll be a good feeling knowing that you just have more space, whether that's physical or, you know, and I believe there's like a mental space that's freed up when you do that.
Uh-huh. So. You know, it's another thing that I've heard people do with that same thing, Chris, is they take pictures of things on their phone and store it on their phone and then get rid of it. So that they at least have a memento if they yes. wanted to keep like a yes. photo album of things that were important to them, they could look at it on their phone, which is way more handy than going into the attic and finding the box.
Yes.
And I will say that I will say this too. If you're going to get rid of that Jermaine Dye rookie card, I want it.
Yeah.
Jermaine Dye was my favorite player on the 2005 White Sox. How many years ago that was now?
Yep. Wow. Jermaine Dye. Yeah, I've got a lot of J.D. Drew rookie cards, if you're interested as well. Darren Erstad. I mean, Pat Burrell. I was going through some of these. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I thought I was going to retire early when I got those cards. I'm like, that's it. I'm set for life. I got my yep. Pat Burrell rookie card.
Yep. Well, everybody thought he was going to be a star. He was pretty good anyway.
Pat the bat, baby.
Yeah, it didn't quite work out the way that everybody thought it was going to initially, which is kind of a the way life works, right? So
that's the way life works. Yep. All right. We will leave it there. We'll be back with you next week with a guest to be determined. But that's it. For Mike Carter, I'm Chris Torres. Thank you so much for listening to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.